Radios. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz with Bathrobe Spears Broadsides coming your way. 11 o'clock, December 27th, 1998. We hope this isn't our last show, but this is our FCC deadline. So hang with us and stay by your phones to call in. We may be in the midst of a raid, and we hope we're not. We hope the FCC is once more blowing hard and simply doing its usual attempt to intimidate broadcasters. Meanwhile, stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Civil Rights for the Poor, a twice-weekly show on Free Radio. I'm your host, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse. Today we have special guests in the studio, James May, and continued conversations and recordings from Santa Barbara and points north and south.
Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Rock, Roy Cohn, Warperon, Pascanini, Dacron, Gendin, Foo Falls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's Got a Winning Team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Prince's Place, Kenton Place, Trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire, it was always mine, since the world began. We did a line, but we tried to find it.
Little Rock, Half the Night, Mickey Mantle, Carol Rich, Sparkling, Joe and I, Rick on the River Quiet, Love and Long, Charleston, Gold, California, Baseball, Star, Paper, Homicide, Turning up the Little Mind. Oh, Buddy Holly, Ben Hush, Space Monkey, Mafia, Hula Hoops, Castro, Enter, Listen, No Go, Doo-Doo, Simon Lee, Paola and Kennedy,
again on your kitchen table, perhaps near your telephone, we hope. Again, the call-in number for 96.3 FM at Free Radio Santa Cruz is 427-3772. In the studio with us, we have a couple of guests here. We have James and his son Robert, the nays. You might call them naysayers if you wanted. On the other hand, it's a question of what you're saying nay to and what you're saying aye to. I think we're going to begin by talking with you, James and Robert, and then we're going to play a bit of an interview, kind of break up the live discussion we're having here. Essentially, we're talking about homeless services, as well as life for homeless people, because you yourselves, well, you're currently, should we say, in your vehicles. Isn't that accurate?
Yes, that's very accurate. We do live in our vehicle.
And we're talking to James. Hi, James.
How are you tonight? This morning, huh? Excuse me, little nervous.
Yeah, well, people are usually when they first get on the air. Hey, Robert.
So,
I ran into you, I guess it was day before yesterday, at the Veterans Hall.
Christmas feed, which, by the way, was a beautiful thing to all you people out there that volunteered. Thank you very much. It was beautiful. Music, food, and no trouble whatsoever.
It was great. In fact, those are the two good meals that people get a year. The veterans saw the Thanksgiving meal and the Christmas meal. And you've been, how long have you been around Santa Cruz, James?
Since actually December of last year. So I've been here about 1 year.
And you've been living in a vehicle?
No, we had a place to stay until July 21st. We lost our home. Well, that's honestly a private matter. That's between me and the persons that I lived with, and that's not for public. I apologize, but...
you didn't have the resources then to get another place at this time. Is that because you had suddenly become a huge junkie and were no longer had the facilities, or because of the rents, or what's the reason you couldn't immediately go into other houses?
Because of the rents. Absolutely, yeah. I was living in someone's garage, and it just became untenable because of other persons that moved into the house. Okay, so they put me and my son, actually my son James, who's not here, this is my other son Robert, he's visiting me for Christmas, but James lives with me all the time, and we were put out, and we went from a garage to a bush, to be honest, because we didn't have a car then. I've only just... couple of weeks ago bought the car, so
your temporary shelter situation.
Yeah, this was our home. We bought this for a home. I mean, it's so terribly hard out there on the streets, and to try, especially once you've lost your place. You lost your place, you can't even rent in this town. Even if you've got the money, you can't rent, because the minute they hear that you're homeless, the door shuts in your face.
You've had that experience yourself?
Yes, I've had that experience in my face.
Now, when you, how many times have you found yourself trying to rent and getting that kind of treatment?
Actually, only twice, but it's because I really don't have the money to afford the rents here. So, I mean, there's not much, there's only been a two that I've been able to even go apply for that I thought I even had, you know, a shadow of a doubt of even getting into.
And how big is the group that you are, how big is your family in this situation?
There's two of us right now, my son and I. Well, right now there's three, but my son is visiting from Stockton, and he'll be going back the beginning of the month. He goes to school there.
Well, let's take a call. It looks like we got one coming in, so hang with us here. Try again there, caller. Looks like we missed you, but do call back, 427-3772, if you want to be on the air, and we will carry it on, as they say. So... what was it like living outside from July to December? Have you ever had that experience before?
No, I have not actually ever been homeless. I've volunteered in homeless centers before, you know, and worked up in other counties, you know, as a volunteer. But to tell you the truth, you don't know what the experience is as a volunteer, because I didn't. And it's quite an eye-opening experience, very much. Very shortly, it only took a few days for my work to fire me, you know, because I was homeless. I wasn't able to be, you know, I couldn't be as responsible, honestly, you know, because I was working nights and having a 13-year-old son, he was the priority at night. So, of course, I asked for a few days off, and when I explained that, stupid me, said it was because I lost my house and I need to go try to find a place to live, then I was canned instantly.
What kind of work were you doing?
I worked for Richard Alfaro, Santa Cruz Sourdough.
You were a baker? Or?
No, I was a load of the slicers. I did about 20,000 loaves a day.
And they somehow felt that you're not having a home made you less able to do your work? Or?
Yes, that's the way I was made to feel. Actually, at first they were pretty helpful. You know, I mean, pretty lenient. I was trying to get there, but once it became a problem, you know, for me to be there, you know, at these early hours, then I just, you know, it was too much of a hassle, and they said, you know, let me go.
Did you find yourself, like many I've been told, kind of pursuing meals, rushing to get to free food lines and things like that? I mean, were you involved in those kinds of services, trying to use them?
Yes. At first, actually, no, because I couldn't find the services. I mean, when we first were put out, I tried my damnedest before we got put out of the garage and went under a bush to get services, some kind of help for my son and I, and was absolutely refused by every service there was in this town, and didn't know about the free food, because to call there, all I ever got when I was calling the resource center was machines that said, leave your number and I'll call you back. Well, I left my number and left my number and left my next, same thing with this families in transition. I left my number and left my number and left my number, and I was never called back. And there's somebody near the phone 24 hours a day. Okay? Shelter services. Let's talk about shelter services. I went out and tried to get a shelter service. Okay? Emergency shelter. I was told that my son and I were not eligible for it because my son was 13 years old. I was told, go to the youth shelter. So I, like a dummy me, thinking, oh, all right, at least I'll get a place for my son to sleep for the night. Went to the youth shelter, and what was the response there? Was, yes, we'll take him. You sign him away, and you may never see him again, and you may never visit him. I said, excuse me, why is that? And they said, because we only take runaways. I said, you mean you're telling me that I bring my son here to sleep at night because he's got nowhere to sleep. I have to give up full rights to my son to get him a bed for the night. And that's what I was given. I was told, yes, that's the absolutely only way they would let him spend the night. So I called the shelter services back and found out they were over on Coral Street, 115 Coral Street, for any of you that don't know. Please use them. They're wonderful services, to be honest. I went there and I was told no because I couldn't go on the women's group. My son needed to go on the women's group because that's where 13-year-olds went. But I couldn't go on the women's group because I was a man. And he couldn't go on the men's group because men's group is 18 or older. So at first we were totally refused. And I said, well, this is crazy. This is a 13-year-old boy you're talking about here.
We're talking about a space on the floor of a church, right?
Right. Just a spot on the floor of a church to sleep at night.
And often, we're talking about the summer services. It was hard to find because usually it maxed out at less than 50, and often it was less than 30.
Average church group is 15 people. Not 50, not 30. Have a total of 30 because they had a men's group and they had a women's group. But each one was a max, so it was 15 men, 15 women. Okay? Now they have two women's groups, two men's groups, so it's 30 women, 30 men, and they have the armory now that it's cold. But at that time there wasn't. But first thing I was told was children had priority. Then they found out that it was a father and a child, not a mother and a child, and everything changed. Suddenly there were no services. And I said, well, what is it if it was a mother? So what they told me was that if I would sign rights to my son, not rights to give him away, but, you know, medical like that, so that they, to the monitors of the women's group, then my son could go on the women's group with the women, and I could go with the men's group, separating us. Okay, but I had to fight to get that. Okay, and so I says, okay. I said, so just to make sure this doesn't happen to a woman, you know, I says, so you're telling me that if a woman comes in and she's got a 13-year-old son, the two of them may go on the women's group together? And they said, well, of course, absolutely. So at that point, I pushed the discrimination button. I says, well, isn't that sign right there on the wall say, you don't discriminate? And they're all, what? Mike Bustico and says,
Mike Christos?
Yeah. Says, oh, what do you mean discrimination? I says, well, that sounds like discrimination to me. I says, what you're telling me is that I can't go on the women's group with my 13-year-old son, but my 13-year-old son has to go on the women's group, and I have to go on the men's group, but if it was a woman and a boy, you would not separate them. That's discrimination in my book. At that point, they put me on the women's group.
And you were not the rapist terrorist that they perhaps feared you would be.
Absolutely not. In fact, made friends rather well with all the women. My son is a James Jr., and so the women all call us Senior and Junior. And actually, they very much, all the women, in fact, that's what I did, was after I had won the right to be on the group, we went out there and said, look, ladies, here's how it is. Would you be bothered by James? And they had this monitor. And they're all, absolutely not. No problem at all. And we didn't have any problem at all.
Now, did you find during the summer, because it was our experience, that people were getting turned away or at least gave up trying because there was so little space, as you pointed out, only 15 and 15. Were there people who had children who were turned away that you know of?
No. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Because of some of the difficulties with dealing with some of the monitors and the way things were done, I believe people were not so much turned away as just gave up trying. Biggest problem I saw, which they're supposed to be correcting now, but this is only temporary, this is during the armory, and why did it take this long, but, you know, after complaining all summer, was that we had monitors who had chosen their chosen 15, okay? And it's supposed to be first come, first serve. You're told show up by 3:30 at Coral Street and sign on, and the first 15 that show up get signed on. And yet we had monitors that were showing up with their list filled out already. Okay? And this went on day after day after day after day after day.
Disabled people get preferences here?
Yes, they do. Absolutely, especially when I was there. I mean, I pushed the disabled bit harder and hard, but yes, disabled there do get preference, and that's the way it should be. And I also brought up the issue of aged. The very aged also get preference. Children, disabled, and aged. I'm sorry, but that's the way it should work.
Now, you know? Do you think that everybody who was in those categories was able to get a space?
No. Not now, yes. No, in the summertime, not at all.
It's not just the summer. We're talking about the spring, the summer, and the fall, because it's only when the armory is open from November to March, and frequently that's on a weather contingent basis until, I guess, deep winter in December.
As we opened November 15th, it was on a three-day. Originally, we were told, you know, we're opening November 15th, we're full on go. And then we're told the day before the 15th, on the 14th, our bosses came to us and said, oh, no, it's on a three-day weather contingent factor until December. Which, of course, with our weather was definitely not a problem because it gave us weather that we all prayed. You know, I hate to admit it, but we all prayed for some kind of bad weather because it allowed us to keep the armory open. You know, which is a good thing.
Well, most of those who listen to this show and have been following this know, but maybe perhaps many of you out there don't, that those who seek shelter in the summer, spring, and fall months have an option of about 30 spaces on the floor of a church each night. And usually those 30 spaces, as you pointed out, James, are well accounted for even beforehand by people who are disabled, families with children, and as you've also said, some of those.
I don't think that's so much any longer. Not just myself, but other people have complained enough that certain people have been let go, and they have very adamantly come out with a rule of there are no preferences. It's the first 15 people, or 13, sometimes it's 13. Occasionally there's more, you know, but pretty much we're at the 15.
Very small number of people if you consider that there are 500 to 1,500 homeless people in the city, and certainly more than 30 disabled or people with families in the city. And the rest of the folks, of course, have no shelter in the spring, summer, and fall, and also have no legal status. They have to sleep illegally outside at night.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And it's really a shame in a town of this size, especially of this makeup. I mean, this is supposed to be the place that all the good people came to? Well, I'm speaking to all you good people out there. Where are you? What happened to the 60s and the 70s? What happened to all the dreams you had?
Maybe that's one of those good people calling in here. We're talking to James Ney on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we have an incoming call. Unfortunately, I think we have a dead phone line at the moment. Caller, can you call back in a few moments? Thanks. We have one of those typical glitches so beloved of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm going to diddle with the phone and hope we can get some kind of working phone line. Until I do, keep calling in, callers. We're going to hope that eventually these lines straighten out. Usually I hit the right contact back here and things start to happen. If they don't, of course, we simply do with what we have to do. Our phone number is 427-3772 if you want to give us another try. And we are in the studio with a former armory monitor.
Or manager?
I was the armory manager.
Sorry, the manager of the armory monitors, James Ney. We also have with us James' son, Robert.
Yes.
Robert, are you, how long have you been in town?
Just about a week and a half.
And are you without lodging elsewhere? I mean, did you come from a place where you had a shelter, or are you in a similar bad situation where you're coming from?
House in Stockton.
You can escape from this scene if you want to.
Yeah.
We're going to try the phone again, folks, so let's cross our fingers. Maybe we'll actually get a working line. Well, isn't that fine? We get a decent guest on the air, and the phone goes out. We're looking at the board here, hoping to find. Could be we just have to have an unplugged phone line. Could it be that we are? Well, an interesting question. This is what we call the seat of the pants activity here. We've actually tried to plug in our phone line. Let's see if we actually have a working phone. Hang in there, folks, and bear with us as we attempt scientific operations on the air.
Testing, test. Yes, we have an operational phone line. Excellent.
All right, callers, get back on your phones. Give us a call at 427-3772 as we continue our scotch tape and baling wire activities here. Looks like an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, hello there.
Hey there, caller.
I was going to ask your guest about his thoughts about relocation camps.
About relocation camps?
Among other things.
Well, here, let me put him on there. He can talk about that.
Okay, what do you mean by a relocation camp?
Well, there are various historical models, basically people that have some sort of need or they're identified in a certain way are relocated. And maybe even during the process of relocated, they're re-educated.
Well, it sounds to me like it's, no offense to you or anyone else, but a way of passing the buck. You know, let's take our homeless and let's pass them somewhere else. If we can build a relocation center somewhere else, why can't we build a location center here and do something right here in town? There's wonderful education here in town if services were made available to the poor. Okay, if they have a place to sleep, a meal in their belly, they learn great. What about our homeless that are educated? Because you know what? There's a large, we are not tapping, a very large source of information because a number of these people are quite intelligent. And I'll tell you right now, I'm not uneducated. And it was a surprise for me to become homeless. But then once I became homeless, I do see what their problem is, and they're not giving you a joke.
What kind of education do you have, James?
2 years of college. Uh-huh. I'm a licensed guard, licensed EMT, advanced first aid, advanced CPR. Of course, this is because I like to do rescue services, so I went out and did these things. But went to college when I was 37 years old, okay? Never got to go to college, barely made high school. I went back, and I do have a high school diploma in that, and I went back at 37 years old, and I did it, okay? People can do it. It's not impossible for them. They need help. Okay.
What do you think, caller?
Well, I want to see if I can present a side of the argument that gets presented often, but maybe not in this way. Another question for James: would you be willing to go to work in the fields?
I started picking crops when I was a child. Well, maybe not a little child, okay, but in my teen years, I picked a lot of crops, okay? I ain't ashamed. I've picked cherries. I've done it all. I have, and I have no problem. I've dug ditches. I've laid pipeline. I've done carnival work, okay?
It's a carny. Get rid
of it. Yes, oh, my God. I'm not ashamed to do anything. As I say, I came here with a college education. Well, not college yet. 2 years of college. And when I came here, I took day labor working for Richard Alfaro, loading bread in slicers. Okay, can't get much more labor than that. So you try lifting up off a conveyor belt and sticking into slicing machines 20,000 loaves a day in an 8-hour shift.
It's hard work anyway, you slice it.
Yep.
It's said that Santa Cruz is a wealthy coastal community. And in order to keep that image, it can ill afford to import poverty.
How about dealing with the poverty it has, Carter?
It's said that the poverty that we have is minimal, and that the magnet effect is not something that the community wants to strive for.
Do you believe that?
You're asking me personally?
Mm-hmm.
My sense is that a community has certainly the privilege to take a leadership position on issues. And one of the issues that are with us is the issue of how we deal with those that fall through the net. If we don't do that, I think we're very negligent in very basic responsibilities as a community. And to carry it one step further, I don't really see a problem in any negative way with Santa Cruz or any community becoming a magnet for goodwill.
Mm-hmm. A beacon, I think, might
a
be
beacon.
A better
now,
way
however, to... however, it needs to be put in here that there is those that will wrongfully take advantage of the goodwill of a community.
Absolutely right.
Now, as I say that, I would also have to say that there has been for thousands of years those that have wrongfully taken advantage of the community that live opulently, fabulous, wealthy lives.
Definitely.
All right, so there needs to be a context for this. When people slam welfare and food stamps and housing subsidy, they need to look at the robber barons in the railroad era. They need to look at history and castles in the Chinese dynasties and put things in context.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, Colin.
All right, however, but there needs to be something said, I think, at least myself, about the belligerent effect on what might be natural goodwill.
Mm-hmm. So you're suggesting that, well, one of the arguments of former mayor and council member Mike Rotkin, who is sort of the chief opponent of reforming human rights restrictions on the homeless, like the sleeping ban, which makes it criminal to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night or cover up with bedding. One of his primary arguments, and I guess you are asking what's James' response to that, is that because Santa Cruz has such wonderful social services, or let's say that this new city council goes further and starts actually putting in some really stronger social services that deal with the holes in the safety net, that deal with, start establishing retraining centers. I'd like to see a computer center for homeless people or for poor people who can come
yes.
in and use a computer center.
They can use the libraries. I mean, I think there is a balance, Robert.
But let's say that this happens. Let's say this happens, caller. I guess you're suggesting that won't that then mean that there'll be a huge trekking of people to the town, and that somehow that some of that population that comes in will be lazy, unworthy, sycophantic, parasitic, if you will, a bunch of bums, in the words of San Jose Mercury News columnist Lee Kornstrom, who apparently feels almost all homeless people are bums, and dubs me the king of the bums. Is that your point?
Well, contempt for the poor is an old story also. And let's remember what it says on the Statue of Liberty. It says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. So now we're going to turn our backs on the very basis, the very core of American idealism here in Santa Cruz. I don't think so. I don't think that's what it's supposed to be all about. There's a balance somewhere that can be struck. In regards to computers, anyone can walk into the Santa Cruz Public Library and use some high-speed computers.
Well, it's
internet access
actually,
and all that stuff.
Actually, he's very right. My boys go there every day. You can get an hour free internet on the library. Anybody listening, hour free, any library branch, use it. It's great. What we're talking about computers, though, is a little bit more netting towards the job market, such as that, which is not really, the library's not really set up for that.
Well, you see, I think what it boils down to in many ways is somebody pays. And people, I think, get uptight about programs oriented towards the poor because the poor, generally speaking, are defenseless. If you're wealthy, you got lawyers and you have spin doctors that can pad things and create a very different scenario than what can be created with the poor. The poor are very easy to slam, and contempt for the poor is one of the common ways that certain people build up their own sense of self. Because
self-worth,
they got nothing
yeah.
else going for them. I think what we need to strive for is to be able to open up on these issues. And to me, this is part of the broader issue of exploitation.
Definitely.
All right.
Yeah.
And
okay.
when we sincerely talk about the poor, we are also talking about exploitation in the sense of the reality of the wage disparity.
Oh yeah.
All right. And I do not personally favor law as a way to rectify. Maybe as a the last resort, but I think we're much better off going for the human factor.
We as people.
All good religions express these values.
Right. We as people, we as the members of our community, need to solve these problems. Not the police, not the council, not the President of the United States, not some other agency, but we, the people.
Well, you know, the police and the consul and the president are are part of the people. And well, hey, no, wait a minute. Nothing happens as elaborately as we human beings have constructed it, particularly in the West, without a hierarchy. So you're going to have police, you're going to have city councils, and you're going to have a president. To say otherwise, I think, is pure idiocy.
No. Not to say otherwise. It's to say that we should not say it's their problem to fix our problems. We need to fix them. We need to, as a people, as a member of this community, everybody needs to do their share, whatever they can. And not everybody can. Some people can. Those that can, do. Even if it's just coming in and volunteering. Bringing a blanket down and giving it to someone who doesn't have a blanket. You know, in whatever way you can make another person feel better, you're doing the work of the human community.
I also want to point out that I've talked to other folks using the library computers, and in fact, the library is cutting back its computer services. Apparently, it's cut off its word processing service to people. And also, it's very hard to access. You have to be there significantly in advance. Usually, the computers are taken up during the day. And I don't think it in any way constitutes an effective way of giving poor people access to computers, frankly.
Let's put it in context. These are provided as a public service. And
yeah, but see,
the bottom line is that these things, generally speaking, if they're not paid for by donations, they're paid for by taxes.
Mm-hmm. But see, I think the money you save by having such services available in terms of generating new human resources is more than ample kind of investment. And I think to nickel and dime people to death on this issue, and just like people do around welfare, when the actual welfare, as we know, for corporations is so much more, is really directing and misdirecting the attention of our society to where it should go, which is, where real priorities are being allocated has to do with pointless weapons of war and senseless kinds of top-heavy endowments to the rich, when most of us are struggling 2 and 3 jobs, struggling to pay rent and eat at the same time. I mean, it's a grotesque situation that, in spite of a so-called good economy at the moment, I think is generally getting worse.
It is interesting how in prison you can become re-educated, amount of public taxes that have been put into the prison base,
right,
I think is interesting in this context. We're in a phase where there are going to be many left behind in the wake of economic revolution, right? And what does one do? And what are the minimums? And these are not easy things to answer. And I come back, and I don't mean this purely cynically, but would you be willing to go to work in the fields? Somebody does that kind of work.
You offering him a job in the field?
It's honorable work. It's not dishonorable work.
Are you offering our James a job in the field?
No, but it's sad that these things weren't made accessible to those that might want to avail themselves of that kind of an opportunity.
I'm gonna wind this up because we probably have other callers who want to call in. But is there anything you want to conclude with?
Happy New Year.
Hey, thank you.
Happy New Year to you too. And actually, you got some good ideas. And that's the big thing. Keep thinking, keep trying, put them into action.
And this is your inspirational radio station, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your inspirational host, Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norse. With us in the studio today are Robert and James Ney, folks who are, James has done a number of things. He's recently been, and he's currently homeless, and has recently been working. He was the manager of the monitors at the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, the Armory Winter Shelter. And we're going to talk with him about that and how he came to take that job, how that job treated him, and what he learned there, what he can pass on to us about that job, and how it happened that he lost that job. We're going to do that after we have a brief kind of musical interlude and do a little listening to an old interview. We're going to kind of break this up. And by the way, if you want to call in, callers, feel free to call in. We will stop the interview for live discussion. That's always preferable to taped stuff, in my view. And again, the call-in number is 427-3772. We're going to play one of our favorite songs, which we've been throwing in more and more frequently on this show, Carol Denny's this town gets ready for Christmas. Stay with us and give us a call at 427-3772. Unfortunately, we just screwed up on this town gets ready for Christmas. Let's see if we can do it anyway. I'm going to go with it. Hang in there.
On the sidewalk, you cannot lean on the wall, you cannot stand in a doorway, you cannot be here at all. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets on the floor. Jesus would think it was something.
The beautiful Carol Denny's voice from her album Failure to Disperse, which, if you're interested in getting a copy of it, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's an off-air number, but there'll be a message there, and occasionally I'm there. That's the phone line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And you can get in touch with Carol Denny's stuff that way. Wonderful songs, and you can hear them on this show. You're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. In the studio with me are James and Robert Ney, who are giving us the ground view of not just what it is to be a homeless working person, but what it is to be in the midst of homeless services and struggling to help other homeless people to do a, to make a living as you're doing it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of, I'll break it up this way, James. I want to play a little of this interview, which we've been promising. It's a two-month-old interview with activists about the history of Karen Gillette, who is, of course, as those of you may not know, she's the head of the Homeless Services Center, formerly known as the Homeless Community Resource Center. And she has been funded by the city and the county for almost a decade now. Began working with the free meal program back in 1990, when it was actually 1989, when it was called Calamity's Cupboard, under the managership of Jane Immler. who started the program when some of us began holding meals at the town clock, which police arrested us for, and finally forcing the city to respond to this obvious need of at least one hot meal a day for homeless people. But let me, before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about how you came to get a job at the Homeless Services Center as an ISSP manager. What happened? How did that happen?
Well, I've been using the center, like I said, since about a week after we became homeless. At one point, we were actually, like I said, on the women's group, going with to the church shelters and on that, until there's some problem came up with some woman or something there. I don't know. I was never actually explained. I was just suddenly told we're there, waiting to go on the shelter bus, and the bus leaves, and we're told, no, you're going with the men's group. And I said, what? Nobody told me about, you know, any change in thing, and nobody did. Absolutely nobody. This is one of the people, one of the other clients said, oh, no, you're not going with the women, you're going with the men. And so I went to...
Both of you, you and your son?
Both of my son and I. So they decided they were going to change their rules and send a 13-year-old with the men's group, which was mostly 50 and above.
Was it a bad idea in your mind, or did it make any difference?
Actually, it was a bad idea in my mind, but, you know, I was willing to accept any type of shelter at the time. I didn't feel that a 13-year-old belonged with the group of people that they have been about... basically carrying the same 14, 15 people for the last 4 years on this group, you know, without any change, you know. These are what we call lifers.
Are we talking about disabled older men? Or?
Yes, disabled older men, alcoholic, narcotics offenders, you know. Not a good group for a 13-year-old, you know, who's never really been in the streets before to be around. But it was shelter. You know, I'll admit it, I was much happier with the women. They were very nice. We got along. Everything worked. I was never explained why it was changed. Somebody complained, I assume, you know, said, what is a man doing on the women's group? And, you know, but my question is, we have a men's group, we have a women's group. Where's the families group? Okay? To me, I think families should be number one. Okay? I think disabled should be number one. Aged, number one. But like I said, so we, until this point, so we went to get ready to go on the men's group, and we were told it's 30 minutes later, it's going to leave, you know, we have plenty of time. I went to Howard and said, Howard, we're walking to the end of the street where our vehicle is parked, because we had a broken down bus, Volkswagen bus, and get our bedding out of it and walk back. Now we're talking half a block, okay? And we got to the bus, pulled the bedding out, turned around, walked back, weren't gone 3 minutes. Okay, and as we're walking back, we see this busload of men leaving the shelter.
They left without you.
Yep. And I was told later by the driver that the driver even asked, because I know the driver of the bus, and he says, well, what? And Howard said, oh, the hell with them. They're not here. They can't. They don't need to go.
Howard was the monitor in charge?
Yes. He was the monitor. He's another one of the monitors. He's no longer. I admit now that they have finally. It didn't. It only took till the end of November to finally change monitors. You know, I mean, it didn't matter how many people it seemed complained or, you know, on and on. It went on and on until we were getting very vocal. You know, but. So I still continued to be around the shelter. I put in applications with the shelter. I put in, you know, with ISSP and with HCRC.
Applications for work or for shelter?
For work. I mean, I didn't just want shelter. I wanted work. I went to the Shelter Neck River Street shelter, put in application, and the trailers in back, you know, the ones we all built for the families, and they...
Community house.
Yeah, community house. It was to be for families that the day it opened got changed to single recovering addicts.
Really?
Yeah, there's no homeless families. There are no homeless family shelters in Santa Cruz except the Jesus Mary Joseph House run by the Catholics, which is extremely particular about you only being a Catholic and, you know, things like that. They say otherwise, but it's, you know, four bedrooms.
Go ahead. And caller, try again. We just missed you. I think we do have operational phones, so give us a second call. So you're saying that they're... tell us a little bit about community house. Let's diverge. Well, let's before we diverge, let's see if we can catch this call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I just wanted to make one slight correction, and that is that Community House was not set up for families. It really, at any point in any of the recent preparations for it, it is single adults only. It is not couples, and it is not minors or people with children.
Uh-huh. Any comment on that?
I agree, but what was the money raised for? Can you answer me that, ma'am?
If you could go way, way, way back in their history, back like 1990, it was supposed to be extremely low-income housing, and it was not differentiated by just single adults at that point in time. But
when did it become differentiated to single adults?
When certain federal funding became available for transitional housing that had all of those restrictions.